Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Diener Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr., Jim Osarski, your Bengals beat writer, Cincinnati.com, the Cincinnati Inquirer. We are back from Denver, and I don't know about you, but I'm pretty happy that we're done with the road for a little while.
Yeah.
It's three in a row. It just, it wears on you.
It does.
It chips away at your soul a bit. So.
Yeah,
I'm ready for three at home.
Right. I mean, you know, it just, these type of things, they're rare in the NFL. Although this year, it seems like there have been a lot of strange, like, three games at road, three games at home for several teams around the league. It does wear on you a little bit, you know, makes you appreciate what our colleagues, our good buddies, Zach Buchanan and C-Tret Rosecrans deal with on like a, you know, 12 game West Coast road trip.
I could never do baseball for that fact. Yeah. The amount of travel that they do is ridiculous. I couldn't imagine doing this constantly. I mean, I'm exhausted, and we just had a 3 weekend.
That's yeah, it. Right.
But about to be three at home.
Yes,
the Browns this week. So, if Thanksgiving thrown in there, it's easing up. We're coasting now. We get to coast to the end of the season here. So we'll see how it goes. I want to run down real quick some things that we're going to get to. The Bengals win in Denver. They win. I was not properly enthusiastic. They won. Yeah. They won a game. It had been a while since we talked about them winning a game and made some plays, and amazing that when you have your best players playing in the second half of games,
right,
sometimes that helps you win. As Vontaze Burfict and AJ Green came up big.
Go figure.
So there's some stuff to unpack there. We've got where kind of take some, you know, let's take stock of this offense, yeah, that's ranked dead last in the league a little bit, and see where that's at. We're going to get into how amazingly this team is still very much in the playoff picture. I can't even say it without laughing, because it's crazy.
It is.
As sideways as this season has gone, the AFC is so terrible that the Bengals are right there in the mix. We'll get to that. Of course, we'll have our Jolly Plumbing Jack of All Trades Player of the Week pick from some guys there. We'll talk about Vontaze Burfict, who I mentioned a minute ago, but, you know, playing, I would say, arguably his best game of the year.
Yeah.
We will have our power rankings. This week, power ranking commonly misspelled words.
Yeah, which is a kind of a pain in the butt in our profession.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. It's one of those where it always shows up in the spell check.
Yeah.
where, like, some of them I'm so bad I can't even get spell check. It gives me the, like, I don't recognize. So we'll get into those. We'll talk about what we're mad and happy about. I do a couple reminders. Plugs. Quick plugs. First of all, live BBP is coming up. It's right around the corner now. November 30th. So a week from this Thursday, a week from Thanksgiving. November 30th, the Thursday before the Steelers Monday night game. Live BBP at 50 West Brewing Company. Me, Jim, Optimistic Bobby, Optimistic Lindsay. It's going to be a great time. We're going to, you know, we'll do a full BBP recording. And then, of course, off air, we're there to talk whatever questions you want, and hang out, have some beers. The food will be rolling. It's going to be a great night at 50 West Production Works. So come down there November 30th. Live BBP. Going to be awesome. So we'll have more details out on that. But mark your calendar. Come on down. 7 o'clock. We'll be hitting the record button, and we'll have that going for you. So come on down. Also, be BTS this week, Darquez Denard. Next week, Michael Johnson. So that's Holy Grail Banks. 7 o'clock on Tuesdays. So come on down. Check our shows out there. All right. We've plugged. We've previewed. We should get into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither of us predicted or thought the Bengals would win. And for as bad as the Broncos were, and all of my lack of confidence in Turkey Bowl, and he did throw the ball at the Bengals a few times. I don't know. I guess to me, Paul, I think that the pleasant surprise, if you will, was the fact that, and this sort of rolls right into your first point, something you wrote about early in this week here, Cincinnati.com, is the offensive line played way better than I thought they would. And it allowed Andy Dalton some time, and he made a couple throws. And really, you mentioned Vontaze Burfict, the way the defense played, that was really kind of all they needed. So I'm surprised, a little surprised. Obviously, I picked them to lose, so I'm definitely surprised that that they're still in it, as you said.
I thought I was going to hit the scoreigami with my 12-11 score with no offensive scores, and then all of a sudden there was offensive scores all over the place. Although two of the Bengals' three touchdown drives were started, one on the 1 yard line,
right,
and another one in Denver territory. The defense set up the offense pretty much all day.
Yeah.
You mentioned the offensive line playing better, and there's something to that. I think if you're looking for something encouraging, so we have to be specific, though, when talking about the offensive line, because this is pass protection,
right.
Not running game, which still somehow comes in lower than their already disastrous yards per carry. 26 carries for 49 yards on Sunday. I mean, you know, what do you do with that? That's on a day where you had some runs that you could feel good about. Some fives, some sixes, an eight in there. Like, there were some runs, but then they have so many zero and negative runs because guys just get whipped and get blown up in the backfield. It's unbelievable how inefficient the run game has been. But put that aside, what did we say before these three road games? I said, I think it was repeated often, we kind of were scared for Andy Dalton's life. Like, this line going against on the road, Jacksonville, Denver, even Tennessee has some nice all-pro linebacker, Brian Arakpo.
Right.
Jarrell Casey. And you saw this line, and it looked like a recipe for disaster. Quietly, you know, they're not great. I mean, there still was a strip sack there, you know, in Tennessee, and there was still five sacks in the last 3 weeks. But when you consider where the bar was and the struggles that this group had, and they lost Jake Fisher, they have played fairly well, closer to what? How about closer to serviceable? Does that work?
Yeah, because when the bar is resting on the ground, you don't really have to do a lot to jump over it. So yeah, I mean,
it's the bar up.
Yeah, you know, so maybe it's around shin level now, and that's you know, I mean, look, and I'm not just like picking on these guys. I mean, if you're, and I always qualified, if you're into the PFF thing, I mean, like Trey Hopkins and Russell Bodine were graded out in like the 30s. I mean,
mostly because of their run,
right,
though,
right?
That, because the run blocking was so bad.
So I mean, you know, so you're right though, like pass pro. Look, yeah, I mean, other, you know, AJ Green was around. I think they probably would have got off a few more deep balls against Jacksonville. And look, that's what this offense needs, you know, and it's that's been the case for years. And, you know, it's worked the last 2 weeks. Yeah, serviceable is a good word. And look, I'm not convinced that there's any really great teams left on this schedule. We could debate Pittsburgh and Minnesota. Sure. You know, I'll give them their due respect. I will respect their names.
I will respect
their names and their records and predict Bengals L's at that point. But it's not like I don't think they could win those games as long as Andy Dalton has enough time to throw because he is who he is. And when you see that kind of spacing, it can work for this Bengals offense.
Yeah, and you know, they're not going to be able to consistently have long drives.
No.
You know, the only thing they do consistently is, you know, you're going to get two quarters of nothing but three and outs. That seems to be the one consistent thing.
Yes.
But they need these splash plays.
Yes.
And because they've done a better job protecting, and they've done a better job of not just AJ Green, but some of the other guys. What have we seen? We've seen Brandon LaFell now 2 weeks in a row with some big plays. We've seen Alex Erickson now start making a few plays for you. And the other guys stepping up and starting to make some plays can really be what they need. I mean, they're just AJ Green, you know what he is, but there's so much attention paid to him. Those other guys have to win one-on-ones. Man, we are a broken record on the BBP with this.
Right.
Like, they just don't do it enough, but we're starting to see that more. But the thing is, before it'd be, they would win some one-on-ones, but that would be when Cedric Abuehi would whiff or Trey Hopkins would whiff,
right,
and then it gets sacked and you wouldn't ever get it. But now you're getting a few more clean pockets,
right,
where you can throw it down the field a little bit, and they've done it effectively. You know, they threw the deep ball to Erickson, another one to LaFell. The touchdown to AJ Green is one where on third downs they weren't afraid to throw a deeper ball and trust the line will block it up, and they've done a better job of it. Cedric Abuehi, believe it or not, did not allow a pressure Sunday against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big step for him. He still continue to have his struggles. We joke about Cedric Abuehi. I had a great game except for those two plays,
right,
where it was like a strip sack fumble, blew up. Yeah. But in this case, I just feel like you're starting to see the line at least play a little bit better in pass pro and giving them an opportunity to get some plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, look,
Denver defense.
Look, I mean, Von Miller made Andre Smith look foolish on several occasions, but in regards to Abuehi, I mean, just go back to, was it week two or three last year when Denver came in to Paul Brown Stadium, and that was really the I mean, it was like, uh-oh. No, uh-oh,
yes.
70, whoa, this could be a problem. That, you know, that was really the first indicator game, right? Because I don't think the first game of the year was that sort of out there. So you're right. I mean, if you just want to compare, same defense, you know, essentially, same skill on that. It's just, small victories. Again, the bar's low. But look, Paul, I was having a debate with someone on this same topic at Paul Brown Stadium on Monday, and look, I think this defense, and we've said this, okay, maybe they won't be dominant, but they're good enough to win and give you a chance to win. And I just think if this offense, how bad is this going to sound? If this offense can score 20 points, I think they have a good chance to be competitive, probably with anyone but Pittsburgh, right? I mean, it's not like the Vikings are just rolling teams with Case Keenum and Jerick McKinnon. And, you know, I mean, they're kind of winning in the same way with some big plays in their pass game. So, I don't know. Look, bar's low. You got the Browns. I mean, I think people will be feeling a little good going into that Monday night game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, assuming you go and beat the Browns, I think you are feeling good. I want to bring in Bill Lazor, who we talked to on Monday, and I thought he was really good on a couple of topics, a few that we touched on briefly, but I think it's some good insight into he's not a guy throwing his hands up, but he's clearly a guy that's sort of just like trying to make it work. Yes. And he's very honest about like kind of a little bit of the laughability of some of the things that they go through and that he goes through as a play caller and trying to get it right. So anyway, here's Bill Lazor with reporters on Monday at Paul Brown Stadium.
I think, you know, it's a funny thing when you're the offense coordinator, it's easy to be the least popular guy in the city. Some people would look at the stats and say, man, what a good job. You know, even, you know, you had officially 26 run plays, whatever, you know, stayed after it. And then some other people would look at the same stats and say, if you average 1.9 a rush, who's the idiot that keeps calling runs? I mean, it's just and they're both have a good perspective, depending on how you approach it. But the only thing that matters is that we won, and part of the reason we were able to play the game the way we were able to play it was that we got the lead. You know, it happened because of a turnover that got us down there close, and then the very next drive we drove it for a second straight touchdown. So because we had the lead, we were able to do what we could to take one of the best players in football off of the part of the game that allows him to beat you. You know, Von Miller can beat you when you're dropping back and passing a lot. And so because we had the lead, we were able to take a certain approach, and we won the game with it. It wasn't the fanciest or the flashiest, you know. It wasn't the most productive, but I think we needed a win, and that's what we got.
With the run, the amount of times you ran it, even though it wasn't as efficient or productive, your play action fakes, you got separation in the pocket is good. I mean, it was good separation when it was play action. It was like, wow, Andy's got time and space, you know?
We were able to play the game on the terms we wanted to play it a little bit. I don't want to sound like, hey, this was great.
Right.
Wasn't great. It wasn't, no one walked up saying it was a great night other than the fact that we won. But I think you get, sometimes you get into those ruts in a season where you feel like if we could just get a win right now, maybe we can get the momentum turned. And that's, I thought, what we were able to do. And we did enough. You know, some weeks 20 points will be enough in the NFL, some it won't, but it was.
This speaks to probably a very bigger picture thing, but the long stretches of three and outs, it's like, it seems, is that a thing where it just becomes a snowball effect where it's, cause it seems like it'll be stretches where then you'll also have stretches of the opposite where you'll have 3-4 drives that are all really good in a row. Do you feel like it's like a connected thing?
I wish it wasn't, but sometimes you think that momentum is an elusive force in the game, you know, and when you don't have it, even if you might say, oh no, each one, we deal with each one on its own. But I think there's emotions, and so guys can get up and down a little bit in the game. I think in the we thought Coach Lewis said the keys to the game. He looked at the ball security, right? So we didn't turn it over. Third downs, which we've been struggling on recently, and I think they were number one in the league going into the game, and red zone touchdown percentage. And so we didn't turn it over. We were, 7 of 15. Does that count the penalty? Right? So 47% against the number one defense and third down. So I thought that was a big, huge, it was a huge improvement. And we were 2 for 2 in the red zone. So those three areas that Coach kind of picked out as these are going to be the keys You know, so we still didn't get as many plays as we wanted and much production, all that stuff. But those critical areas, I think we were able to take care of business. And, you know, obviously we had some big-time players come up with plays. You know, I thought Alex Erickson's play was a really important play to get that second touchdown. And then it goes without saying, A.J. Green, you know, being one-on-one and he and Andy connecting down the field, you know. At that point, you kind of feel like it put us far enough away that our defense could probably clean.
I would say, speaking of, you know, keeping Andy clean, over this road trip, how do you feel like the offensive line pass pro has come along? Does it feel to you like it's trending in the right direction? Three road games, mm-hmm. some really good pass rushing right. teams, and only five sacks, which you'd like it would be lower, but that's sure. compared to where it was.
I think it's trending.
Do you feel like it's
trending positively? I think... Someone had mentioned the play actions earlier. I think if you really break it down to the different ways, again, this game, it helped that we kept the game in our favor, that we had the lead. You know, so I know typically you get into some of those games against Von Miller and some of these elite pass rushers, and when they know at the end of the game that it's – that's why on that fourth down or fourth quarter, third down, I mean, that's when they really gear up and that's when they make game-changing plays. And if you can run a different play, then – drop back pass every single time, I think it helps you. But we kept the game in our favor a little bit. I think it was a loud state. It is a loud stadium, and so the silent count is always a factor. You watch on film, they do a great job getting off, and I think our guys handled that well by changing up the silent count we use, having different things with the center, and that always helps. Now I just think our guys know that this is what you need to do to win, I think. I mean, we think our linemen know we have good receivers. I mean, you can't always throw a hitch. Sometimes you're going to have to throw it down the field. And to do it, I mean, it sounds obvious, but all right. When we call this in the huddle, this is what it's going to take. And everyone's trying to win. Everyone wants to do it right, and so I think they're working at it.
When you get to the 38, I'm sorry.
Do you feel more comfortable as a play caller calling more balls down the field right now because they have been protecting me a little bit better, or is it still kind of the same as it's been?
I think it's really important that I believe in them, and then when it's time to call it, I call it. If I'm ever hesitant as a play caller, I would worry that the players would sense it.
Yeah.
If I'm afraid to call a deep drop and the player sensed it, I'd feel like I'd be letting them down. Like, gosh, maybe he doesn't believe in us. No, you can't. I gotta call the game and believe that, trust them that they'll make every call, that they'll make the call right. And I know that might not always happen, but I just think over time the players sense how you're calling the game. They know you've practiced all these things. Why aren't they showing up? Or you've practiced all these things, and hey, he's going to call them. He's going to call his own read on third down. He's going to call a deep ball in a critical situation, you know, and he trusts us to make the play. And that's part of what I have to do preparing for the game, is we sit as a staff and we talk over what to do. And if we've got it in ready to go, you know, if you believed in it on Wednesday, then show the players on Sunday that you believe in them to do it. I think it's important.
Okay, so there was Bill Lazor, and you know, I think it Bill is very upfront and honest. I mean, this the fact that am I an idiot for calling 26 runs when I only get 49, or are you saying, hey, way to stick with it and actually right. run it 26 times? But you know, it's a tough spot to be in as a play caller.
Right.
Everybody loves to hate on the coordinator, but as a play caller, what do you do when you know one in every four or five runs is going to go for negative 2 to 3 yards, but you have to run it to try to keep the defense honest? I mean, it's an impossible task.
Well, it is. You know, it's kind of funny, Paul, because you and I both get the messages the last few weeks, why do they give up on the run game? And it's like, no, they didn't really give up on anything. They just couldn't do anything. So therefore ran 30 plays like an average high school team. But here's the thing. I honestly, so, you know, Joe Mixon, you know, a couple 4 or 5 yard runs that really set up some play action. Look, I think Joe Mixon, there's a healthy respect around the league for him and his talent and what he could do if he got a crease. I mean, you see a lot of rally tackling, a lot of backside, you know, patience, if you will, with him. And I think that helps, if that makes sense. If you give him, and this goes back to what we talked about, and yeah, it was just 8 to 10 carries with Jeremy Hill, but I think the last couple weeks you've seen, you know, those 4 or 5 yards on one drive gives you that chance for the deep ball, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not great. I mean, we're talking like 4 plays here. I mean, so I'm not going crazy with this, but it's just, but I think that's why he's not crazy for 26 attempts at 2.5 yards a carry, because occasionally they get 3 for 12 and then can play action and then someone's open down the field, you know, namely AJ Green. And look, hey, I wrote it last week. None of those guys could get open against Tennessee. And then against another man coverage unit against Denver, Alex Erickson got open. Brandon LaFell got open. So I'll credit, hey, you know, they were a little better on Sunday. And I think, you know, hey, like you said, when you're kind of trying to find something that works, you know, you got to hit on those 4 or 5 plays.
Yeah, you're right. And it's just, they're not going to be a team. You can't scheme up a run game.
No.
You can't trick the defense. You can try. I mean, God knows they've tried every
right.
Every shovel pass and jet sweep and RPO and all of those things. I mean, certainly they've tried all that stuff. But, you know, it's – They're just trying to find a way to keep themselves in third and relatively manageable,
right,
and stay out of 2nd and 13.
Right.
So, all right. So that's a little bit about the offense. Let's move on. Let's do, since, you know, we mentioned Obwehi earlier.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Jolly Plumbing Jack of All Trades Player of the Week. So you can obviously go to jollyplumbing.com if you want to get your votes in. So here's our three. Kevare Russell.
Yeah.
Cedric Obwehi, Josh Shaw are our three that we came up with. It's a tough one that all three definitely contributed.
Yeah. Real quick, I think Josh Shaw was interesting. Good rebound. I mean, victimized and just a bad day at the office against Tennessee, you know, just bad with a lot of penalties on third downs and really contributed to a loss, frankly. And I thought he was better. Good run defense. Drake Kirkpatrick gave him a lot of credit for properly playing the rub route that has so befuddled Bengals DBs all year. And lo and behold, Brock Lobster, you know, throws one to Dre. But I'm going to go with Kevare Russell. Look, I mean, anytime a dude who doesn't play and then it's like, hey, you're playing, and yeah, then makes a play. I mean, look, hey, he blocked the kick. Shakopotamus, McManus, I don't know, maybe he misses it. But it at that point, hey, they won by 3. And the kid got a hand on a ball, and it was a great play. So that's who I would vote for.
It was. That's your vote. I'm saying I'm with you. I think I'm with you on Kevare Russell. I think that was the it ends up being, you can argue, a play of the game. Did a great job getting around the corner. It's kind of that jack of all trades type of mentality where, yeah, you know, he's not going to get, people probably didn't even remember it because it happened right at the end of the first half. You know, it certainly was a huge play in the game. So we'll give it to him. We'll give it to Kevare Russell. So remember, jollyplumbing.com, jack of all trades, player of the game. Go ahead and vote there. Thanks to Jolly Plumbing, of course, being a part of this. Let's talk about an interesting thing here, and that's the fact that the Bengals are in the playoff picture. Like, and it's not crazy where they always list it in the hunt,
right?
They are legitimately in the hunt because they're tied with all of these 4 and 6 teams that sit there, right behind in the last spot. Because you've got basically, it looks like the top five spots are fairly spoken for.
Yeah, unless the I guess unless Tennessee kind of backslides, but I do think their schedule, you know, sets it up a little bit for them.
Yeah. So you've got the Ravens and the Bills are 5-5, and then you've got just a glut of 4-6 with the Chargers, with the Raiders, with the Bengals. I mean, those are kind of your. I think you know you've got the Jets. Technically, you've got
the Dolphins. But, I mean, don't forget Dolphins. Matt Moore.
Look at all those teams, okay? So all don't forget Matt Moore. So look at all those teams. Tell me who has the top quarterbacks. That's what it's about, right?
Yes.
Who has the best quarterbacks amongst this group of trash teams that are once somebody's going to get into the playoffs?
We're going to drive some Bengals haters crazy here, aren't we?
It's Philip Rivers and Andy Dalton. Yeah.
It is though. I mean, especially look, and the Bengals already beat Tyrod Taylor and the Bills. You know, it's assuming I don't know what's going on at Buffalo with that situation, but no, you're right. I mean, you've got Josh McCown and Nate Peterman. He of the 5 picks and 14 attempts.
Yeah,
you've got back Flacco. The Flacco back? Matt Moore. Don't count
Matt Moore.
Yeah. I mean Derek Carr, I guess if we're going to throw Oakland back in this mix, obviously.
Derek Carr has played bad this year. He has not been good.
If I'm going to make fun of Joe Flacco's back, I mean, Derek Carr is gotten out a broken back as well, like quite literally. So you're right. I mean, as of right now, under Bill Lazor, Andy Dalton is playing at the best of that group, is right, along with old man Rivers.
Dalton had under Lazor, he has a rating over 116 touchdowns to 4 interceptions.
Oh, Bengals Twitter hates you for that.
They hate that. I know they don't like the numbers and things like that. And clearly, although he is leading the 32nd ranked offense in football,
right?
But we kind of got into that earlier, but. You know, Dalton by the numbers. With what we're comparing him to,
right? Exactly.
The Dalton line is always the big joke because he's the average quarterback, right? Well, everybody that we're pretty much talking about, outside of a couple, in this glut of bad 4-6 teams, are below the Dalton line in quarterback. Are teams that are going to be looking at Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen next year, for the most part. So,
Well, that's okay. You just made Bengals Twitter happy now because that means the Bengals will be still looking at Lamar Jackson in your mock draft 1.0
coming out
in 2 weeks, right?
Coming out in 2 weeks, right.
Okay,
yeah,
just making sure.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
Just ruining your night.
Just don't. It's too late to be doing that. It's too late to be doing that.
Hey, man, I'm in a mood, man. I'm binge watching The Punisher on Netflix.
Yeah,
I've been waiting for this to come out. And
The Punisher.
I mean, I don't really do things that make me happy. It's making me happy.
Wow.
So,
but
so I'm in a good mood. I'm going to give you. I didn't even mention how the Jags are 7-3, and already one of those bets is like. Yeah. Makes me
Dude, here's the thing.
That's crazy.
Stories are now being written about how the Jags are the new Seahawks.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, well,
at least Super Bowl.
At least defensively.
Yeah.
Blake Bortles not turning into Russ.
No.
By the way. So here's the funny thing that we talked about the other this was after the game last night, over dinner. If the Bengals somehow they're going to have to beat a team that's not bad, by the way, at some point to do this. But if they got that 6th seed, they would more than likely play the Jags in Jacksonville again, and we get Jalen Ramsey, AJ Green, part 2.
That would be great.
All the fights this time in the playoffs, and we get to go back to Jacksonville.
Yep.
Which no one would be excited about, but the actual game would be chock full of storylines, which would be very fun.
It would be.
Now, the reality, as Andrew Whitworth would say, the reality is that this team is not does not have enough to get. I mean, eight and eight is probably going to be enough.
But yeah,
to be in a tiebreaker.
Yeah, that's the thing. Eight and eight is. I would be shocked if not shocked. I could see 9 wins, obviously, but 8-8 for sure. But the hole the Bengals dug themselves in with all these AFC losses early, and obviously we knew even before they played Tennessee and Jacksonville what those games would mean in a tie-breaking scenario. And that's blown up in their face. And AFC losses are part of the tiebreaker as well. Now, granted, they've played more AFC games than all of those other teams you just mentioned. So that'll even out, but, vagaries of the schedule, Baltimore's going to get, Baltimore got Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers. So yep. That's huge for the
you know Bengals what that in is? That
regard.
You know what that is? That's the difference between the Bengals being 5-5 instead of 4-6 and the Ravens being
exactly.
4-6 instead of 5-5.
Exactly.
Because I don't think there's any doubt that the Bengals would have won that game if they were going against Hundley. And I think
we can
both feel fairly confident that Aaron Rodgers would have beaten the Ravens.
Yes, without a doubt.
It's stuff like that is what makes a difference. But the Ravens defense certainly playing very well, but are they? I mean, they've had a few shutouts.
It's hard to have a shutout in the NFL. I saw it week one and I saw what happens in order to get a shutout. Yeah. So I'll give old man Suggs and his old man pass rush enough credit and whatever. And you know how I feel about AFC. Now you're making me mad. Talking about AFC football. There is not a good team. Like I said,
someone's got to be the sixth team.
Yes. Well, there you go. Yes. Someone's got to be the sixth team.
Six teams will qualify for the postseason out of the AFC. And that means the Bengals
league rule.
Sit here. It is the agreed upon rules. So the Bengals will beat the Browns on Sunday, more than likely. And they will probably need to beat one of the Steelers or the Vikings. And then other than that, because here's the thing, they should beat the Bears at home. The Bears?
Yeah, I think at that point.
Trubinskys?
Yeah, the Bears have been quasi competitive because Vic Fangio's defense at 3-4 look has been really underrated and good. I think at that point, you're kind of losing some steam.
So we've got plenty of time to digest this, but with 6 games left, the Bengals have a game against the Ravens. They've got the Bears at home. They've got the Browns at home. There are wins out there. It is set up for the Steelers to do their standard knife through the heart thing on Monday Night Football, which is just would be a very Bengals situation. But
is the lone Bengal and this is what I think of the Browns. Like I'd almost rather talk Steelers for 2 weeks. Are the Bengals kind of the prime Steelers take a dump game because they're kind of looking over an inferior opponent. Like at that point, the Steelers are 9-2. You know what I mean? Number one
seed. I would say no because it's
the Bengals. Okay.
It's the Bengals. They've been obsessed with the Bengals all year, making fun of them with their touchdown
That's
celebrations.
True. That is true.
And Twitter fights, and then you throw in that it's going to be Monday Night Football. And a chance for them to basically put them out of their misery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all the things that Pittsburgh loves to be in at Paul Brown Stadium. It's just a little too right up Steelers' wheelhouse. But that's what would make it a special win if the Bengals could pull it off.
Yeah.
Because it does set up that way. Now, that's 2 weeks out. We will talk about that at the live BBP. We'll really be getting into it there at the Production Works.
Right.
So, again, that's another reminder that you're going to want to come down on November 30th, because we'll be really breaking down that what will potentially be a huge game, assuming Fighting Hughes don't get their second win in two seasons.
Yeah.
They can avoid 1-26. Hugh had a line from his press conference today. He had to be reminded of what his record was.
Oh.
And he just dropped a Lord have mercy on him, which that's about all you can say when someone tells you you're 1-25 and you didn't realize that's what it was. So that's where they're at, right? It's remarkable that the Bengals are in it, but hey, isn't that the NFL?
Yeah.
Land of parody.
Yeah.
Land of parody.
Yeah, I won't. I know Thursday the deuce is for really game breakdown, but just real quick, I mean, this Bengals team is just bad enough that they're 8-point favorites over the Browns early in the week. So it's not a total walkover guarantee. Browns have been somewhat competitive at times, but I think you can build. You know, it's one of those slingshot games. I do. I think you win the tough one in Denver, and you put together another good pass pro game against the Browns, and Myles Garrett playing for the first time in this rivalry, if you will, and you can really, I think, at least feel good about it if you're the Bengals going in to that Pittsburgh game and thinking, hey, for 30 minutes against the Steelers, the offense was carrying the day. So yeah. On the road, which isn't a lie. Like, that's Joe Mixon's best day was those 30 minutes. So I think really, truly, you know, if they handle business, Paul, I think we'll sense a real confidence, if you will, I think, going into that Monday night game.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Can we talk about Blue Apron real quick?
Yes.
Are you ready to give me this? Did you have the meal waiting for you when you got home? You did. It's like the Monday tradition these last 3 weeks. Come home, box is just sitting right there waiting.
It is. It has made life great. Yeah. I went with waiting for me, Paul. Seared steak with garlic butter, oven fries, and romaine salad covered all the bases. Waiting for me. Coming home from Denver. Why? Because Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And they achieve this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs like me, especially because it's right there, ready for you. Look, you get variety, you get flexibility, you can customize recipes each week based on your preferences. Like me, I like to eat some meat every now and then. My wife's a vegetarian, so, you know, I got to get a little something for me. So, and it's guaranteed fresh. That's a big deal. Every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping. That's what we do for you. So go to blueapron.com/beat. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/beat. Blue Apron. It's a better way to cook.
Better way to cook. Let's talk about Vontaze Burfict real quick. We have been talking about his very ordinary pedestrian play this year.
Yeah.
Maybe compared to expectations. I know I had him as overrated of the first half.
Yeah.
In our mid-year awards because the expectations were so high, because the rating is so high, because $39 million linebacker not producing $39 million games.
Right.
Not playing the type of games where he changes the dynamic of the game and basically goes a long way to helping you win it. Well, yeah. He did that on Sunday. There's no doubt his response game to getting kicked out in the second half against Tennessee showed you exactly the type of difference that he can make when he's on his game. This was vintage Burfict. Back into the outside took your advice from your solutions story last week.
Hey, what do you know?
Imagine that. It worked great. Next thing you know, Vontaze Burfict making plays again. 12 tackles, forced fumble, sack, you know, tackle for loss, filling up the stat sheet type of stuff, the type of games you're used to seeing from him when he's at his best. And, you know, his fumble, his forced fumble that Sean Williams recovers ends up being what leads to the touchdown to A.J. Green on the short field.
Yeah.
That, and that basically is the game right there. You know, just that's what he needs to be all the time, every week. He can't take 10. I mean, you can't be in game 10
right,
and talking about finally seeing that. He needs to be that. He definitely needs to be that the last 6 weeks of the season. That's for sure.
Hey, when was the last time we had this conversation about 55 in this manner? It was against Buffalo at home.
Yeah.
What was that? I mean, people can go back, check it out on iTunes and SoundCloud and all that stuff. What were we saying about that Buffalo game? They finally had to win one. How to win. Win a close one. Mm-hmm. Right? What else happened in that Buffalo game? Now, granted, A.J. Green probably had his worst half in terms of the turnovers, but guess what? Huge plays from your two best guys.
Yeah.
And it's not a coincidence. And, Marvin Lewis, I don't even know if it was a question, but I just wanted to say it on Monday.
Yeah.
Like, hey, first time in 2 weeks, those guys finished the game. And Marvin's just like, yes, we have a better chance to win when they're playing. And, And you're right. I mean, the guy balled out. I mean, he was everywhere
not to interrupt you, but how different would you feel about this entire team if Vontaze Burfict is in for the second half in Tennessee and makes the one play to end the game winning drive and win you that game? You're 5-5. You've won what, 3 of your last 4. You got the Browns coming, so you're going to have won 4 of your last 5. You're going to be 6-5. You won 2 out of 3 on the road. Man, it's hard not to look back at that. And we can talk about the validity of the call by the decision by the referee, because Vontaze Burfict not fined by the league at all. And for a guy who's been fined as much as he has and repeat offender status for stuff just like this, first time ejected from a game, to not be fined at all, much less not suspended, I think was the league admitting they screwed that one up. And maybe he shouldn't have been ejected. And hard not to, I think, you could sense Bengals coaches and players and their staff feeling like he could have been the guy to make that play, much like he was in Denver. And you just, everything looks different if they finish off that win in Tennessee. Everything.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, third and seven check down to a running back is a play that Vontaze Burfict doesn't let get 7 yards, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, that's just the game-winning play, and yes, I understand there could have been a field goal in overtime, but I think, you know, you go back, any one play, when he plays like he did Sunday, it changes things, you know, and you go through that second half, and yeah, they were shutting out Tennessee, that's true, but all it takes is whether it's a turnover, which he has a knack for doing, whether it's a sack that helps flip field position, or whether it's simply, you know, on that game-winning drive, Josh Shaw isn't in position to have to hold on 3rd and 5, or, you know, they're not just getting first downs every 2 plays like they did on that last drive, you know, because Delanie Walker is just, like, wide open. Over, you know, again, we love Vinny Ray, but, you know, Vinny's not paid $39 million.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, it's just, you're right, Paul. And again, this goes back to even Jacksonville. For as bad as that first half looked, it was still 16-7. You know, and you had no offense then for sure. So it is. It's if you write the epitaph on 2017 because they lost out on a tiebreaker to the Jags, and you'll have to wonder. You'll always wonder about it.
Yeah, we'll see where it ends up, but everything would feel so different if that had gone differently.
Right.
Let's bring in some of the Tez audio from after.
Yeah, he's feeling good
after the game. Yeah, he was feeling good, feeling himself a little bit. I know you guys like to hear from him, so here's a little bit of Von Tez Burfict from after Sunday's win in Denver.
Let's talk about two specific big plays. First, Dre with the interception and the 101-yard run back from the end zone.
Man, Dre picked that play, the same play that they did. Dre picked that off in practice. Remember that, Vinny? Dre picked that same play up in practice. So he's been waiting for that. He told me last night, he's like, I'm waiting for him to run this route. And we was in a play that he can jump that route. So I'm just happy he ran that, 90 yards, whatever?
101.
101, yeah.
And then the other big play, your forced fumble that led to what to be the winning touchdown.
CJ's a friend of mine. It's always a physical game when I play him because, you know, he's like a bowling ball. You know, you got to wrap up against him. I've been playing him since college. Well, known him since college. And, you know, he's a good player. I've been watching. He's from California, just like I'm from California. So, you know, I'm a big fan of his. But when I seen him break through the hole, I'm like, oh, I got to team up. So first thing I did was just – I didn't even wrap up. I seen him, he had the ball, which side he had the ball on. So I just put my helmet on that side of the ball, and it just popped out.
End of the game. Bengals elect to punt and say to the defense, all right, it's on you guys to hold on. Yeah. And you did.
Yeah, I mean, it was huge for us to do that. It was big. I mean, you know, we kept telling each other at the, you know, before that drive, we kept telling us it's going to be a four and out. I think that, you know, everybody stepped up and, you know, before we went on the drive, we told, you know, Kyle G was telling us the routes, what we're going to expect, and literally everything he told us what to expect, that's what they ran. So that's why we were able to get off the field and, you know, four and out. But, you know, it's huge. That's why we're the defense to obviously to win some games here. So
guys are going.
Congrats on the win.
Thanks.
Guys are going down left and right. You know, I mean,
but how here?
I was going to say, was it the? Was
yeah,
it
shit hard. You when you get tired, you can't catch your breath. Yeah. I was hurting. But, you know, we gave it all and got the win. That's all that matters.
Dre said that he talked with you before the game to just have fun, forget all the nonsense. He said you had fun today. Did it feel like that for you?
Yeah, I have fun all the time. Honestly, today was a calm game. I would say the refs were being nice to me. So, I mean, it was a calm game. You know, whenever you're making plays and you're winning, it's always a fun game. You can fly around and make plays. But when you're, you know, sometimes when you're losing, you know, you kind of have to just stay within the scheme and you can't, you know, guess sometimes. So, yeah, you know, me and Drake kept telling each other when we come to the sideline, just a happy place and, you know, make sure, you know, just continue to not let them score.
All right, let's talk about ZipRecruiter, because when you are posting a job, ZipRecruiter is the way to go. They get you all the best candidates immediately, all the best candidates for your job. Boom, ZipRecruiter posting, it's coming back to you. And
With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So rest easy knowing that job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work, actively notifying quality candidates about your job within minutes of posting it, so you receive the best possible matches. Paul, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get quality candidates in the site in just one day. So ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries, maybe even up the river in Cleveland, to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post their jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/beat. That's ZipRecruiter.com/beat. One more time, write it down, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/beat.
Okay. We've done a good job of covering the Cincinnati Bengals on this podcast. Let's get into the more important stuff, really. Let's be honest. it's time to power rank commonly misspelled words. Because why do we do this? Because power rankings are stupid. Yep. And this is our way of saying that power rankings are stupid by power ranking stupid things. So let's start. Do you have now for me, this comes back to when you write as much as we do,
yeah.
There's just certain words that you end up using a lot and you type, and I just, every time you go through, you type them in and can't do it right. So I've got a couple, we'll just do a couple, and see what we've got. Do you have, what do you got?
Yeah, I've got, do you want to do two or three?
Whatever you could. Do you have three?
Well, I've got two for sure that are just really weird, and I'm sort of ashamed to admit this, but I'll, you know, our listeners, mm-hmm. I'm not afraid. I'll open myself up.
Open it up. Yeah. All right, go
so,
for it.
No, number two, and I think people will connect with me on this, Paul, because it's so common. They're so easy, right? Number two, players.
Players?
And it's because I forget the A or the E.
Mm.
It's one of those when I'm typing, you know, or play I always get. It's if I say player or players, it's one of those vowels just disappears on me all the time.
Disappearing vowels are the worst.
Yes. Which kind of teases my first one, which you're going to – I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe I'm going to say it out loud. But, yes, players would be number two for me.
Okay. Now, for me, it's – I know how to do it. But I just get confused because I type it so fast, and then I look at it, and I'm like, wait, is that – I start doubting myself, and that's receiver.
Hmm.
Like I should – it's like the E's and the I's. Right. I know when it looks right.
Right.
But I never type it right. I always have to go back, and it's always on my spell check. I think I type it too fast, and I start mixing everything up. Because and we type it so often, and then you got the E's and the I's, and I just – there's no way I should – as many times as I type receiver. I mean, I probably type receiver, what, 5 times a day?
Yeah.
At least. And it's always shows up. It always shows up. It's not my number one, but it's always shown up. So I have that as sort of my number two. Again, much like players, sort of embarrassed by that, but it's I think it's mostly a speed – typing issue that I've got, which is where a lot of
stuff yeah is. I definitely, and that's where number one is for me, and this is going to be, I can't believe I'm gonna say this,
just do it, what is it?
The
T-E-H.
yep,
T-E-H. You go too fast, dude. And you have the T-E-H.
There are so many T-E-H's.
Oh,
so many T-E-H's. I don't know.
It's true.
What it is. True. It's just, it's there. That does all happen. The time.
and it's so aggravating because you look at it and you're like, really? I got to go back and fix 5 T's in this transcript. What is going on? That's true. That's a good one. That's a good one that I probably should have thought about because I think we all have that. Any of us that have ever transcribed anything have that. Because I have a very clear number one. Like, there's no, everything else is so far below it. Legitimately, if you asked me to spell this out loud right now, I still couldn't do it. And I have tried. I have to think of so many other ways to find other words that mean this because I just don't want to try to spell it. And it's rhythm.
Ah.
I hate a rhythm. I cannot stand a rhythm. Like, why are there so many H's and Y's? Like, what in what order do they go in? And how does this, how did I never learn it? Like, I never just committed it to memory and said, no, Paul, it looks weird, but this is how it's spelled. I've never been able to do it. And I teased this early in the show, but this is totally true. Multiple times I've had it where I am so far off trying to spell it, that it doesn't even recognize what I'm trying to do. The H doesn't go there. I hate that word with a passion. I'm anti-rhythm.
Yeah.
And I just try to find other ways, you know, to describe having a good pace, a flowing pace, in stories, because I just don't want to spell
right.
it, and I don't want to be embarrassed by spell check telling me they don't know what I'm talking about.
Right. So basically, Bengals fans, if you have a method to fix Paul's rhythm spelling, definitely tweet at him some suggestions.
Yeah. I need like
too
a
many
good,
hyths. I get it. That's a good one.
Spell rhythm right now.
Rhythm.
What, there should be a second Y.
No, there shouldn't.
Yes. There should be a YM at the end. It sounds like I always want to put more Ys in there. I want like more, way more Ys. I don't know what's wrong with my brain. It just doesn't connect that way. Okay, so we've taken care of that. Again, another great power ranking segment. If I do say so myself, I'm sure there's at least four people still listening. All right, so let's go to what is making you mad. Why are you mad?
Well, we did travel quite extensively over the past month.
Yeah,
and you got to witness this. This on our flight, very early flight home from Denver. And the thing I don't like, the thing that makes me mad, is when people expect order in chaos. And they get mad when someone wins in the chaos. And here's what I mean. Mm-hmm. I respect a good line. Get in line for coffee. Get in line for tickets. It's a line. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Everyone knows. But when you're sort of a huddled mass of people, namely to get on a plane that doesn't have a, you know, your big old group, or maybe before like the check-in opens. And that's not a line. There's no line there because there's nowhere to go. It's just a mass of people standing. So
yes,
it doesn't. I really don't care if you had been there since 2:30 in the morning and I showed up at 4:45 and went right to the front. I don't want to hear your little, like, there's a line. No, there is no line.
No, I witnessed this. So I actually witnessed what Jim is trying to describe here. And this was,
I started
sadly for us, we were there as they opened the TSA pre-check at like 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And everyone had just huddled wondering when they might open it. So no one knew. So it was just sort of just a little grouping of people. And Jim just bossed everyone and went all the way, just morning Jim, no coffee, went right in front of all these people that had been. And then some dude did drop a little soft, like, hey, there's a line. And Jim was just like, whatever. And just went through.
Yep.
It was pretty hardcore.
Yep.
I gotta say.
You know what? You know how that line started? After me. That was a line.
We now had one. That's good. Here's what's making me happy, and like this could go in what's making me mad, but I'm gonna mostly say I'm happy that this had never happened to me until today, else I would never fly a plane again. And that was, I was a victim of man spreading. Do you know man spreading?
Yeah, I do.
So first of all, I'm on the tiny regional flight, like the little tiny that it only houses people 5'10" and shorter, basically.
Right.
And I hit my head 3 times on the, I have to like cock it to the side just to even walk through. It's one of these small guys, but there should only be 3 seats in a row, but there's 4. And I'm on the window, so I'm kind of turned to the left, tucking myself in there. And a guy is sitting next to me, and he just extends his legs out in a V, right, and spreads and into my space, like all up in my space, and just relaxes like he's the king of the world or something. He owns this row. I mean, I am tucked in, and he's like touching my leg. And then at one point, there was a foot extension into my underspit, into the space under the seat in front of me. And I'm just thinking, what kind of mentality do you have to have in your head where you're like, you know what? I'm just taking this row over. I'm just sticking this guy a little. I'm going to pin him against the wall of this tiny little plane. That seems like a really great idea. I'm so happy that I'd never come across this on a plane until today.
Yeah.
Because it was honestly kind of hard to deal with.
Yes. I am aware of that phenomenon, if you will.
Have you ever been manspreaded against?
I have.
You have. Yeah. It's,
and then it turns into a weird, like, you know, I've got a lot of metal in my knees, so I'm just kind of like, all right, we're going to do this. We'll see who's, you know, it's I've been watching I've been binging on The Punisher, man. I'm just in a way.
Yeah,
I'm in a way.
You're ready. all right, let's wrap things up here. So, reminder to everybody, November the 30th, live BBP at 50 West Production Works, 50 West Brewing Company. We will be down there. Myself, Jim, Optimistic Bobby, Lindsay, we'll have a whole crew going, doing a live BBP the Thursday before the Steelers Monday night game. So it's going to be a ton of fun. Get your coast to coast. Drink, you know, get all your quality drinks in, some rabble rouser. I mean, the food's going to be going. Come on down. We'll hit the record button at 7 o'clock. We'll be right down there. So come down to 50 West on November 30th for the live EVP. Dark Quest and Art this week on BTS. Michael Johnson next week. If you want to come down to Holy Grail Banks, if you want to do the downtown thing, we will be down there. Browns this week. Thanksgiving this week. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And all right. So we are out of here. We'll talk to you later this week. So hope everybody has a good one. And talk to you later.